Okay, let's get healthy here with John Mayfield. John's a local boy. He's a renowned healer who's drawn on ancient and modern techniques of various cultures and traditions in his development of unique systems of healing. He has been in practice as a chiropractor for over 40 years, and he and his wife, Judy, live in Grass Valley, California. And welcome, John.
Well, welcome, Michael.
Thanks. Great to have you.
Yeah,
great awesome. To be here. And we have Lady Marielle Kamel here. She's a shiatsu expert and energy healer, and also happens to be my partner. It's great to have you here, Marielle.
Thank you, Michael. I'm a practitioner.
You're
not
a practitioner.
Expert, but thank you.
Not an exhibitioner. Okay.
John's beautiful new book here, Body Intelligence, A New Paradigm. It's got a big heart on the front cover. It's just a beautiful design. I love it.
Lovely book. Yes. Your third book?
Second book.
Okay. Well, let's start out by talking about the connection. You hear a lot of people saying, well, you need to come from your heart. You need to live from your heart. And a lot of people say, well, what does that mean? I live in my heart. What does that mean?
Well, most people live in their brain. We have two consciousness operating systems, heart and brain. And through all history, almost everyone has come from their brain, which is really a prediction machine on its own. It's always trying to predict the future based on the past, and it's always problem solving. And the trouble with that is, from the past, it brings all of your missed opportunities, all of your shame and guilt, like heavy chains that it's dragging behind you. And in the future, your brain is always projecting things to worry about, to fear, your frustrations, anxieties. Your brain, really, if it's in charge, you pretty much live in hell, which is where most people are most of the time.
There's a lot of that going on now, given the state of the world, the economy, the environment, social justice. And a lot of it has to do with fear. What's the relationship of fear to dropping from your head into your heart?
Well, fear is actually a healthy emotion of your kidneys, but only if you experience the fear. If you try to think about it, which is what most people do, if they're angry, they think about why they're angry. If they're afraid, they think about why they have fear. And all that does is amplify it. It makes it actually expand and become greater. Mm-hmm. So you really create a monster. With your heart, you want to actually feel all your feelings. And your feelings are most like the energy of your spirit. So when you feel your feelings, it really connects you to the wisdom of your own spirit.
What would you say about people who are just kind of numb to their feelings? I know a lot of people have suppressed so much and dissociated so much that, you know, you ask them how they feel and they say, I think I'm doing pretty good.
Right. When your brain's in charge, you just think about all of those things. You don't really feel it. The brain wants to isolate things down to just two of your seven dimensions, the physical realm and the mental realm. And that's where almost all of our sciences and philosophies and politics especially. And actually, for a lot of people, that's where their religion is. It's all about right or wrong, good or evil, which is what the brain does. The brain's very dualistic, where the heart lives in the present moment. And you and I talked about that. I call it waking up. You call it being in the present moment. But it's really basically the same thing. And so when your heart's in charge, you expand out into all your dimensions. So starting out, when you get to the emotional level, when you open to that level, all of what you know expands and more than doubles itself. Because the wisdom of your spirit and the wisdom and the feeling of your feelings, the actual experiencing your emotions, that connects you up to the wisdom of your spirit.
What are the seven dimensions you mentioned? So we only use basically the first two. You're talking about the third, but what are the seven dimensions that you're referring to?
There's the etheric world, which is like your energy double. So when you take a shirt and hold it up to see if it makes the color of your face light up or darken, mm-hmm. you're actually looking at the etheric body. And then the emotional realm, and then beyond that, the emotional realm is really ruled by your kidney and bladder system and your blood vascular system. Mm-hmm. Then the acupuncture meridians, they rule the causal body, which holds out your energy field. So this aura that you have around you is being held out very stable by your acupuncture meridians, and that represents your attitudes. And it's all right out there in your energy field for everybody to see. Mm-hmm. And then the endocrine glands and the chakras, which are the sixth and seventh levels, they represent your values and your beliefs. Mm-hmm. And then when your heart's in charge, you actually expand out into the wisdom of your spirit and the talents of your own soul. Mm-hmm. So your consciousness radically expands when you're in your heart. Mm-hmm. And you really feel connected not just to people, but you feel connected to the river, the mountains, the trees. You feel connected to all life.
I'm glad you mentioned our connection with the mountains and the rivers and trees, because we seem to have a epidemic of what some people call
Nature deficit disorder.
Thank you, Marielle. Yeah, my brain is... We just drove down 2 days from Canada here. So, yeah, exactly. So there's this you know, real removal from nature. Talk about the relationship of the heart to nature.
Your heart really feels connected to everything. If you don't feel your feelings, though, if you just think them, then you really separate yourself from all of nature. When your brain's in charge, you really are not connected to nature at all. And so every unfelt feeling creates about thousands of toxic thoughts and actions, saying and thinking and doing things that you would never script if you were writing the story called Michael Stone. And so when you feel the feelings, and you keep feeling all of the feelings that come up, your mind calms down. And instead of generating 60,000 thoughts a day, you go for long periods of time with no thoughts. And then once your mind calms down, because that's like a filter, a screen, then everything opens up. And then the feeling of the trees around you, the feeling of the river, the mountains, all of these things start opening to you. But when you're so occupied with your thinking, you just shut yourself down into this little cocoon of the past and future.
Now, you're not saying that we shouldn't think, because that's pretty important. We couldn't get out of this room without thinking.
That's
so
right.
You're saying to open up a lot of our thoughts, actually create our feelings, and then we create stories around them and go on from there. So I'm still interested in how people, because when I hear you say that, I in the language I would use is to love whatever's arising within you and not resist it. But you're specifically talking about feelings, the immediate energy of the moment. So, and what I'm asking is, you know, so many people are numb to them.
Right.
What are some ways that people can actually feel the feeling? I mean, a lot of people don't want to. I don't want to feel that.
Right.
You know, I don't want to feel the grieving 200 species a day that are going extinct. I don't want to feel the idiot president that, excuse me, I'm going to get attacked here like CNN, but too bad. You know, these things that we just don't want to feel. We don't want to drive by a clear cut and see what's happening. We don't want to see the plastic garbage patch in the ocean. You know,
Well, what you resist persists.
Yeah.
When you feel the feelings, they blow through within just a few seconds. Mm-hmm. The more intense feelings blow through within about a second or two, like anger, hatred. When you see a clear cut, I mean, my heart feels so sad when I see a clear cut. And if I feel that sadness, it just goes, whoa, and it's gone. And then my mind is free to see the beauty that's not just in that little clear-cut section that I see. And so the more you try, pardon me, the more you try to not feel your feelings, the more intense the environment crowds in on you. The not so much the environment, but the social environment crowds in on you. And so then you start seeing all the wrongs, and then you're slam dunked right back in the brain again. And the brain is really looking at all the problems. And if not directed by the heart, the brain will always problem solve. And so I kind of lost my track there.
That's okay. We're still trying to get at the feelings. Do you have anything you want to say about it?
We have fear of the fear. I'm thinking of my own experience. You know, in dissociation, not leaving, in a sense, leaving my feelings by going into my head and being anxious and being stuck in anxiety and in my head. There's a fear of feeling the fear, in a way.
Right. Well, there's no feelings that you really can't feel. When you go to a scary movie, you're not afraid of that. But then when you think about, for instance, our wonderful president and the damage that he can do, all of a sudden you get scared, but then you turn it into thoughts. And so the heart translates all of your feelings into a language that your brain can understand, but the brain by itself is just going to loop on things. And so if someone frustrates you, if you just go inside and without any mental dialogue, without trying to change anything, without trying to fix anything, you just feel the frustration, the irritation, the anger. They just blow through. And then once they're cleared, then you're free to, and then you're in the moment. Then you're living in the present moment with all this beauty around us in this beautiful blue-green paradise world we live in.
Now you said if somebody frustrates you, but my experience is that other people don't really frustrate me. I'm usually trapped into a pattern from my early childhood.
Right.
It's not really – I think that's really an important point, because we so often blame our feelings. First of all, we get numb. Then we blame our feelings on you make me so mad.
Right.
Yeah, but all that the person did was trigger something from their past. So, and it's a remembered past. It's not even the real past.
Right.
So we float in this netherland between going from the imagined future and the memory of the past, the imagined. And so how can we use the body and the heart to bring ourselves into this expanded state of awareness? Because when we have these things and we get triggered by things that other people do, but it's really in us, we get contracted and we're looking, how do we expand and why should we expand our awareness into the present?
Well, first I want to back up just a little bit. You have, I call them metaphoric programs. You have programs for everything you've ever done more than once. You've got programs for how to talk to your mom on the telephone, how to cook an egg, how to drive your car, how to ride a bicycle. We literally have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of these old metaphoric programs. And that's really good, because when you get in your car, you don't have to think all of the things that you have to do to drive a car safely. The program just instantly loads. The problem with it is when something triggers, like the frustration, if you don't feel that frustration, your mind takes you back to the earliest time that you have an emotional charge around frustration, and all of a sudden you're 8 years old and frustrated at your little brother. If you don't feel the feelings, you always get drawn into one of these spells. But when you feel the feelings, it eliminates it. How do I say this?
Well, awareness dissolves it.
It dissolves it. It dissolves that old program, and then it replaces it with how you are in the present moment, which is a much more empowering program. And so when I first got into abdominal breathing, I was in the Army, and this went to the post library, and I was looking for an action yarn in this book. Two bookshelves above me fell into my hands. Hatha yoga. It wasn't what I was looking for. But I cracked it open, and there in the middle of the page, all in capital letters, it said, until you learn to breathe abdominally, breathing is the most important discipline that you will ever undertake. Mm-hmm. I started making breathing be my discipline. And what I found was I would catch myself breathing shallowly about 20 times a day. And each time I would take a cleansing breath to break that pattern, I would start breathing abdominally. And each time I would wake up from some unconscious spell, like feeling inadequate, insecure, frustrated, worried. And as I started breathing, I dissolve and replace that with a more empowered program. And at the end of that year, I found that I replaced about 20 old unconscious thought forms every day for 9 months. And my energy level doubled. But what really, really surprised me and impressed me was that my self-esteem more than doubled.
Sounds like a good use of time when you're in the Army.
Right, because everything frustrates you in the Army.
I spent a lot of my time in the library there, too.
Not me.
Not you. You weren't in the Army. No, you're Canadian.
I was just thinking about the neural pathways in the brain and the plasticity that we're now aware of, we have these ruts that we groove neural pathways and certain patterns that are ingrained and just repeat and repeat, and what you're saying is really giving ourselves a chance to create new neural pathways also.
Right. I see those as neural, they're like feedback loops. And 90% of your brain is occupied with your posture or with how you are in relationship to posture. And so when I learned about posture, it was the same thing about breathing. Every time I would stand up straight or sit up straight, I'd wake up from some unconscious spell, and how I handle it would replace that old feedback, neural feedback pattern. Mm-hmm. And so it's all kind of locked into posture. Mm-hmm. And I've come up with 7 habits. I mean, I've studied these 7 habits. Breathe out strong is the first. It's the first habit in posture. It's the first habit in spiritual awareness. It's the first habit in manifestation of what you want. And then stand up straight, sit up straight is the second habit. Feel your feelings is the third. And
so wait, I'm confused. You said a number of things about the first one. I didn't quite get.
Breathing out strongly?
Abdominal breathing is what you were talking about, right?
Right. Well, most people.
But you connected that to a number of other things.
Yeah, it's breathing. However you breathe out is how you breathe in. Mm-hmm. And most people breathe very shallowly, which crowds them into a little bitty life. Because you're a spirit and you have a soul and you live in this body, but every body has its own animal spirit. And that animal spirit can be as meek as a mouse or as mighty as a grizzly bear. And breathing is the difference.
Well, let's lead us on an abdominal breathing for a second. So if you're at home, if you're driving, don't do this. Well,
if you're driving, do this.
Yeah, you could do this.
Just don't close your eyes.
Put your hand just below your belly button.
Yep.
And as you breathe out, it goes in and up. And that squishes the most amount of carbon dioxide out of your lungs. It actually makes your diaphragm go up like a dome inside of the bell-shaped lungs. And then when you
can feel a spaciousness when you do that for just a minute too.
And then when you breathe in, your belly goes out like Buddha belly. Mm-hmm. So your belly goes in and out, the ancient rhythm of life. And when you breathe like this, you breathe a huge mixing bowl worth of air with every breath. It's like a very, very powerful bellows. And you actually get the energy out to your fingertips and toes. If you have cold hands or feet, it's usually because you're a shallow breather. Mm. And if you're not getting the energy out to your fingertips and toes, then what about that other extremity, your brain?
Yeah, he's pointing to his head.
Yeah. And so the simple definition of stupidity is shallow breathing.
But I think it's interesting that you focus on the out-breath. Mm-hmm. A lot of people focus on the in-breath.
But that makes you a chest breather.
Right, exactly.
And so when you're chest breathing, you actually disengage your diaphragm, and you're only getting this little dessert bowl of air. Maybe a sixth or a seventh of the amount of air that you get from diaphragmatic breathing, from breathing out strong. And so...
Interesting. Yeah, now, would you count the seconds? Does it matter how long the breath is?
Well, in a lot of spiritual practices, you really do count the breath. But generally, it doesn't matter whether you're breathing with your mouth open or closed. It's just you want to breathe out strong, and then you'll breathe in strong. Breathe out strong, breathe in strong. And then you breathe in not just oxygen, but you breathe in courage. And in the five elements, which we'll talk about later, the lung and large intestine is the element of metal. And that's your connection to the higher spiritual kingdom. It's like the vertical axis of the cross, which predates Christianity by about 8,000 years or more. And you breathe in the higher truths. You breathe in goals and dreams. But usually when you breathe them in, the goals, the plans, you think someone else should be doing it. Mm-hmm. But then after a while, you notice you're the one that keeps thinking about it. And then when you commit to it, then what the lung does, it downward disseminates oxygen, it downward disseminates higher truth, it downward disseminates all your goals and plans. And so there's a model called above down, inside out, which is a model of how creation works. It's a model of how healing works. And you have a higher truth or a plan above, and you take it down into your body, above down. And then against all adversity, you manifest it out into the world, above, down, inside, out.
Mm.
And when people are unconscious, they generally run the other direction, outside in, below, upward.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that out there, I have to do something different. So now I have to believe this different way. And an amoeba can do that. And so that kind of thinking, your elevator only goes... not quite to the top floor. It goes up to the level of awareness of a problem, but it doesn't go up to the level of creational thinking, which is when the elevator actually goes to the top floor.
So on a practical level, if somebody wants to practice their abdominal breathing, would they, you know, once they feel comfortable with that process, would they have an image that they would include or an intention that they would include to what you were just saying about drawing in?
Well, your spirit lives just below your belly button, right in the front of your fourth lumbar vertebra. The Japanese call that place hara. The Chinese call it your lower tangshen. And if you grew up traditionally Asian, you'd have 50 to 100 sayings at least about this place of power.
And the Dantian is another one.
Yeah, Dantian. Mm-hmm. Like typically in Japan, if you were a little kid and you were kind of being a brat, your mother might say, "You have black hara," which is like saying your soul essence has darkened. And if you promised your father you would do something, and he came home and said, "Did you do that yet, son?" And you go, "No." He might say, "You have weak hara." And that's probably the last time that'll ever happen, because weak hara is also the definition of a liar. And so all of these sayings lock you back into your diaphragm. And so if you put your hand below your belly, when you breathe out, it doesn't just go in. It goes in and up.
Yeah.
And then it falls back as you breathe in. So you breathe out, it goes in. You breathe in, it goes out. And this is the ancient rhythm. And for a lot of people who are used to chest breathing, this is a whole new way of breathing.
It is, yeah.
And it does give you much more spaciousness in your consciousness. Mm. You're actually breathing the energy all the way up to your top of your head, all the way out to your fingertips and toes, and you feel more connected and spacious.
Yeah. So here you are in the army, a book falls out, and you learn how to breathe, number one, and then number two, you work on your posture, which probably made you look really good in the army.
Well, I didn't learn about
Oh, you didn't learn about that till later. Okay, yeah. I was trying to put those together. But yeah. let's talk about posture, because it is. I grew up in a military family, you know. And
right.
My father was always, you know, don't slump, stand up, and he walked around like he had a rod up his something.
Right. That's with your shoulders back. The Marines were wrong. You don't want to pull your shoulders back. So the rules of posture. I've reduced it down. I studied Alexander's model of posture since 1974. Okay. And I read all three of his books, so there's a lot to learn. And I've really reduced it down to four really simple rules. And the first rule is breathe out strong. And what that does is that settles your spirit all the way down into your heart. The focal point of your spirit is about the size of a golf ball, and it lives right in this place that the Japanese call hara. Hmm. It's your one-point center. It's actually the center of all movement. Everything in your body going up and down, go up and down from that point.
It's interesting. You know, I taught five rhythms forever.
Oh, yeah.
And danced with Gabrielle for over 40 years, and that's the moving center.
That's the moving center.
Yeah. That's what yeah. It's great.
Right. In martial arts or dance, you can't do complex spin moves without having your awareness in hara. It's just impossible. You're too heliocentric otherwise. And so in martial arts, you learn that. And one of the first things you learn in martial arts is when you breathe out strong from your navel, it turns on the chakra at the ball of your feet, which is called bubbling wells.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were going to do a spin kick on some guy that outweighed you by 60 or 80 pounds, you would put your weight and his weight through the ball of the planted foot, and then when you kicked him, he'd go away. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you kick him, and then you fall on the ground, and he laughs at you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when that foot chakra lights up, which is the color of it is more like a Sherwood green, that's when you really become aware of the trees and the things around you.
Mm. That's great. And breathing obviously connects. I mean, anybody who takes a walk in the woods and recognizes that as your breath gets larger, your connection to the web of life
gets bigger.
If you're half aware at all, you'll see that there's a direct correlation between the breath and our connection to the web of life.
I want to go back to posture.
That's what I was going to just say.
All right. This body-mind that you live in, it has 14 very powerful circulatory systems. And all of these circulatory systems go up and down your spine, up and down your arms, and up and down your legs. Mm-hmm. And none of them handle kinking very well.
Handle kicking?
Kinking. Like kinking. Getting kinked off.
Kinked off?
Like a knot in the hose, a kink in the hose.
Oh.
So you've got too much
pressure.
You're
getting kinky on the air here. I'm not sure that you can do that. I see.
If you didn't hear it, a lot of people didn't hear it. So when you have good posture, every cell can communicate clearly with every other cell through every one of these 14 powerful circulatory systems or patterns. Mm-hmm. So then you really expand your consciousness. Then everybody gets to play in this game. Everybody gets to communicate. And each cell is actually like a full-blown computer. Each cell. And you have billions of cells. And so when you look at yourself as compared to a computer, you're more powerful than the Cray computer, than the Lawrence Livermore Lab computer. And every cell knows what every other cell knows, and they're all committed. If only half of your cells were committed and you were left your house and you realized you forgot your wallet, if only half of you turned around and went back. Steve Martin did a movie about that called All of Me, where...
Oh, that was so funny.
Where half Lily of him was controlled Tomlin by Lily Tomlin.
That was a crack up.
Yeah, he was nominated for Academy Award for that because it was his physical comedy was so incredible. But every cell is committed to the same action as every other cell. And every cell takes what you think personally. And this is why it's so important to feel your feelings also. If you if you're disappointed in somebody and you feel the feeling, the disappointment just goes out all your chakras and all your acupuncture points, and it just goes out of your body and it's gone. Mm-hmm. If you don't feel that disappointment, every cell in your whole body is firmly convinced that you're disappointed in them. Mm. And you know how badly you feel when you've really disappointed a loved one? That's how every one of your cells feel. And then they overeat, they're klutzy, they break things, they trip, they run into stuff.
Well, that brings up a whole other area that I often talk about, and that's what Tara Brach called the trance of unworthiness. Particularly in North America, we are so hard on ourselves. The things we say to ourselves,
right?
If we said it to somebody else, we'd be arrested or put in jail. You know, you're so stupid. How could you do something like that? I can't believe you're doing it again. You just must be a terrible failure. We say those things to ourselves. How does this relate to that inner dialogue that comes up?
That's where you get to your feelings, which is the third habit, feel your feelings. Mm-hmm. Every negative feeling you don't feel drives thousands of toxic thoughts and actions, and that's where you get all that dialogue. Mm-hmm. And when you do something, like if someone does something harmful to you, you need to forgive that person. And all forgiveness is feeling your feelings. And so if you go into a toxic event, the first emotion that comes up will be the most intense one, like shame, hatred, anger. And then if you go back to that same event, the next feeling that will come up will be the next most intense feeling. And there's usually about 7 feelings in each event. And so as you keep going back to that event and feeling the next feeling, going back and feeling the next feeling, there's really only 2 emotions, love and fear. And the lowest emotion on the love side of the equation is joy. And so if you don't go back to that and at least feel joy, then you still haven't forgiven the whole event. And so when you go back and all you feel is joy, you've eliminated that link of the chain, and it can't replicate.
Yeah. And a lot of people have a really hard time with fear, and I think the belief, as far as people I work with, often say, I can't forgive that horrible thing that person did, as if it was about the other person. But really, when we're talking about forgiveness, it's to let go of the hold that your blame about something that happened in the past has on you.
Yeah, if you're holding something against that person, we'll call him Fred, mm-hmm. then it's like you have a grappling hook to Fred, to his karma.
Yep.
And then anyone who's like Fred, you have a grappling hook to that person. And so everywhere you go, you see Fred. And so when you feel the feelings, it releases the grappling hook. Mm-hmm. And my father was the most powerful man I knew, and I really, he wanted me to be little Johnny, and he was big Johnny. And he was always kind of disappointed with me as a kid. And when I realized that I had to forgive him, I was 29 years old. Every time a painful event would come up, I'd go back into that event and keep going back to it until I released it. And I did that for about 20 things a day for about 7 years before the wall between him and I came down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the problems were my fault. It wasn't just him.
But I'm glad you said that, because it's not a one-time thing. You don't just feel. In fact, it's more than even feeling. It's allowing, embracing. And it could come again and again and again, and you could forgive again and again and again until it dissolves in your own really loving the feeling.
Right.
And embracing it, even if it's an angry thought. Otherwise, it has a hold of you, right?
Otherwise, it has a hold on you.
Yeah. So
it's like a grappling hook.
It needs to become a practice.
Yeah.
It needs to become a practice. Mm. And so forgiveness is, I believe, as a spiritual being, because we're really a spirit who lives in this body mind for 100 or so years, give or take. First and foremost, we're a spirit, and so our 2 most powerful tools that we have is, one, loving a person into being the best aspect of themselves, or loving our pets, mm-hmm. so that when they do something really delightful, you compliment them and you mm-hmm. feel the delight. When they do something that causes you pain, you feel the pain. And so loving them into being and forgiving them is like carrot and a stick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's brilliant. I love that. So we're at number three.
Was feel your feelings.
With feeling the feelings. So let's go through all of them here so people have a map.
All right. The fourth habit is to shake it off like a cat. Mm. When I was 19 years old, I was at a friend's house, and he was moving around in his house way too fast, and he had a little one-year-old tomcat that got tangled up in his feet and drop-kicked about 15 feet against the wall. It was a splat. And what that cat did so impressed me that it took me years to figure out what I saw, but he stood up, shook it off, and then walked away like, "You missed." And it was only good. A second later, uh-huh. And that whole trauma was behind him, mm-hmm. like it was ancient history, like it never happened. Mm-hmm. And so cats heal much faster than any critters. Dogs are more like we are, you know. They'll limp around for days garnering sympathy for their pain. But they don't have as long a memory as we do, so pretty soon they get to having fun and they forget. We're holding pains that go back to 3 years old, mm-hmm. and everything in between. So when I look at a person's gait walking down the street, I see their whole history of pain in their mannerisms and their gait. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is all of these faulty postures and shallow breathing keeps bringing you back to all of your past. Yeah. And then you overlay that past over the present moment. And so somebody says something that negates you, and you slump down to this, like you did when you were 7 years old when your teacher negated you. And all of a sudden, you've lost all of
How'd
your...
How'd you know that? And she tied me in the chair, actually.
Right. You've lost all the coping skills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we all have those kinds of traumas,
yeah,
really.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, if you felt that feeling of inadequacy, then you dissolve that seven-year-old episode. Mm. And then how you handle yourself becomes the new default.
But instead of feeling and embracing it, we adapt, which is totally appropriate if you're a youngster, to protect yourself. So we find a pattern or some way to protect ourselves, which is appropriate when you're 3 or 5 or 7. But it's not appropriate when you're 40 or 50 or 60 and still doing the same patterns. I mean, we have an adolescent running the country.
Right.
You know, stuck in old patterns. You look back and you can see the patterns in his history.
Well, let's go back to the habits. And so The fifth habit is trust your gut. Mm-hmm. Before every good thing ever happened, you got a good feeling about it. And before every bad thing ever happened in your whole entire life, you got a bad feeling about it. Mm. Chances are you did it anyway. And then when it went bad, you went, "Oh, I knew it was going to go south."
Yeah.
And so you get intuition from your kidneys. We actually have 7 senses instead of just 5. And so imagination from your stomach and intuition from your kidneys. And your kidneys are actually your higher brain. When I went to Palmer Chiropractic College in 1964, when we were studying about the kidney, nephrology class, The teacher explained that each kidney has somewhere between 15,000 and 25,000 filtration units called glomeruli that filter 20% of your blood per hour. And the glomeruli are completely lined with gray matter, which just happens to be the thinking portion of your brain. And none of our professors could really answer the questions because in 1964, thinking that your brain wasn't in charge of your consciousness was such a heretical thought that no scientifically minded person would even entertain it. And then in the 70s, Professor Worsley, who started the Worsley School of Acupuncture and Homeopathy in London, he introduced the whole concept of the 5 elements of wood, fire, earth, metal, and water, the basis of Chinese classical acupuncture. Mm-hmm. He introduced that to the entire world outside of Asia with 18 different country organizations and numerous state organizations. So in the early 70s, when I was just starting chiropractic, I kept going to these seminars where you learned that the liver and the stomach were providing part of your consciousness. Mm-hmm. And then one day, and that was pretty new and exciting, heady stuff then. And then one of my friends showed me a book on the 5 elements. And I realized that all of these teachers that I'd been studying under had either been borrowing directly or indirectly from the five elements. And so the five elements, they're like, it's like a user's manual for how to use your body mind. And when I first started studying it, it embraced all of your idiosyncrasies. Mm-hmm. It embraced your spirit and your soul and your higher your values and beliefs and attitudes, where Western medical physiology was just two-dimensional, physical, mental, very atheistic. And everything you learned was like a circle that affected other circles, which affected other circles, but there was no organizing factor in it.
It's interesting that most shamanic healing paths in indigenous communities follow the five elements, being earth, air, fire, water, and spirit.
Right.
So,
well, spirit would be like metal, probably, in Chinese acupuncture, which is your lung and large intestine, which is your connection to God and the angelic kingdom and the Akasha, the entire Akasha record.
So it's
record.
The vertical.
It's a vertical connection.
And what about wood?
Wood is your liver, gallbladder. That's like springtime when the energy is just rushing. And so your liver is like the architect of your life. It listens in on everything that you think and feel and believe and everything you talk to your friends about, and it draws up plans to have more of that in your life. That's why you don't want to be thinking and talking about what you don't like, because the body mind has no discrimination about polarities. Mm-hmm. It doesn't care whether you love it or hate it, whether you like it or don't like it, whether you want it or would never want it. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking about it, your body mind is attracting that to you. So it's really easy to manifest what you want, especially when you understand the rules. The gallbladder, then, is the other organ. So the liver is the architect, and the gallbladder is like the general contractor, if you consider the building of a house. And the gallbladder makes all of the long-range and short-range and split-second decisions in implementing the liver's plans. And the gallbladder provides the liver with discernment and with good judgment about everything. And we're all a little weak on that level because we've been taught not to be judgmental. But the liver really needs to know whether you can trust your energy with this person, whether you can trust with this event. And so being judgmental is saying a person's a jerk, but good judgment is like saying that person doesn't cross their T's and dot their I's. They don't follow through. They're not self-starters. And then once the liver gets this information, then it can make plans that have integrity.
To navigate.
Right, to navigate.
I was just thinking about how sometimes when we know something's going on in our own bodies, some ailment is occurring, and we put the power in a physician, and our body is saying one thing, and the physician is saying, well, no, that's not it, or giving us the wrong information or diagnosis, and we have this screaming that, no, I know, I have this sense that there is something going on, or I just have this feeling, but we give up our power.
Right. Well, I don't believe any doctor heals anything. Mm-hmm. I believe the great healer is within. And a good doctor connects you up to your healer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. You are the healer, your mm-hmm. body mind. When I was at Palmer, we call it your innate intelligence. And to keep people from arguing, because there were people from the entire world that were going to Palmer. So there was Muslims and Jews and Baptists and atheist. And so innate intelligence would be like your spirit. It's the real guiding factor. And then universal intelligence would be the higher power. So it allowed everybody to talk about it without getting into religious conflicts.
I want to tell people, if you just tuned in, that we've been talking to John Mayfield about his new book, Body Intelligence, A New Paradigm, Living a Heart-Centered Life in a Mind-Centered World.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
That's the only way to live.
So I can't wait. I haven't, usually I read the books before, but since we didn't get that to happen, we're getting a little primer here. And I think we're on number, five?
Right. So.
Water.
The fifth habit is trust your gut.
Trust your gut.
The sixth habit is be decisive. The foundation of your character is like a triangle of cherishing, being truthful, honorable, walking your talk. And then the third point of the triangle is be decisive. And this is how you develop your will forces. And this is all part of the liver gallbladder system. And you want to keep all three of those points in balance. So a person who's really truthful but not loving can cut you to shreds. I was just being truthful. And a person who's really loving but not truthful is mushy and sentimental. And to me, that's a little bit like fingernails on a chalkboard. Mm-hmm. And then a person who's real decisive but not loving is a tyrant. And so it's all about balance. And in your whole entire life, you want to keep that triangle in balance. And so decisiveness is every bit as important as walking your talk, being honorable. It's every bit as important as cherishing, because it's a triangle. Each point either supports or detracts from the other two. And the seventh habit is cherish. The Dalai Lama said he believes the purpose of life is to cherish others. And he goes on to say that when I cherish others, they tend to cherish me back. Mm-hmm. And when they cherish me back, it makes me feel so good inside that I cherish others for purely selfish reasons.
He's certainly pretty cherished.
Right. And if the heart could speak, this is precisely what it would say.
That's great. So we have about 5 minutes left. Mariel, did you have any questions? We still want to get through this. There's a couple more here, but I just wanted to know if you had anything specific.
This is wonderful. It's really giving us tools to create practices that we can use to expand.
As we wake up, we need to understand. And so the five elements is a precise user's manual. And then the seven habits are all designed to bring you back into heart consciousness instead of brain consciousness. When your heart's in charge, the heart wants to focus on what it loves. And so then you create a world that's progressively more loving, more generous, more kind. When the brain's in charge, it is always problem solving. So you become part of the problem. And then you can't get out of it. And so it's the prison bars is the past and the future. And the brain just can't get out of that. And Einstein said that trying to solve a problem at the same level of thinking that created the problem is impossible. And thinking is really the key word there. And then he went on to say that doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome is the definition of insanity. And so if you look at our Senate and Congress and watch those guys bickering back and forth, it doesn't seem like they ever solve anything. They just make more problems.
Are you telling me that the little prince was right? That it's only with the heart that one sees rightly?
That's it.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Okay. Any last words? We've got a couple minutes left here that you'd like to say to bring this to the people even closer. John is here in Nevada, in Grass Valley, actually. You're in Grass Valley, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, in Grass Valley, Nevada City area. And again, his new book is Body Intelligence, A New Paradigm. And it's Living a Heart-Centered Life in a Mind-Centered World, much needed at this point. Any last question or any last comment that you'd like to say, Mariel or John?
Well, in the elements, I'll just kind of take you a little bit. There's wood, fire, earth, metal, and water.
Yep.
And so wood is your liver gallbladder, and that's like springtime. And fire is your heart. And the heart wants to love everyone and everything, but it can't do – and every cell in your body and every – you know, your pets, your loved ones, your family, your children, they all need that unconditional love and warmth and guidance to flourish. And without that, nothing flourishes. And so the heart can't do that and protect itself at the same time. So it has these three imperial bodyguards. And so the first one is the heart protector, the pericardium. And it actually pumps the blood out to every cell and brings it back. And it gives the love out to everybody, and it forgives everything. And so we need to do train loads of forgiveness. You just want to feel all your feelings. When you feel a negative feeling, it dissolves. When you feel a positive feeling, it expands within you. So you want to feel all your feelings. And then the triple burner, the three heater, that's the three warming spaces. The upper warming space is your heart and lungs. The middle is your liver, gallbladder, spleen, pancreas. The lower is your intestines, kidney, bladder, sexual system. And these are all actually like highly esteemed cabinet members to your heart. Mm-hmm. And they're all giving the heart feedback all the time. And so then the small intestine is your third. And it brings everything that's nurturing to the heart and lets everything that's non-nurturing simply pass on by. It doesn't resist evil. It doesn't fight badness, because we know what you resist persists. And then Earth is like Indian summer. That's the last 20 days of every season. That's when things ripen. And so your stomach ripens, not just your food, but your plans and dreams. It ripens your thoughts by thinking things through. It ripens your plans and dreams by imagining them being already existent and playing in it. And as you're playing in it, the heart figures out how to make it more loving. The liver draws up plans to make it happen more efficiently. The lungs breathe in the courage. The large intestine eliminate everything that doesn't work so that it can transform and change. The kidneys sees the higher dream of it. It's your higher mind. And then the bladder just expresses all your feelings. Mm-hmm. And so with all of them playing together, you have this quantum mind, which is so much more wonderful and great than just what your brain can do by itself.
We're so much more than we think we are.
We are so much more.
So much potential.
Really. Mm.
And what happens is the more that you learn how to handle your body mind, the more your consciousness expands. Every year, you embrace more of life. Mm. Your energy level doubles. And peace of mind is the ultimate fruit of all of this. And the Buddha said that happiness was not the destination. It was the pathway.
Mm. I like that. We're going to go out here with a dedication to the mother. And just want to thank you, John Mayfield, for all the work you've done. I was going to say four centuries, but I guess it's only four decades. But you've worked hard, so maybe it is four centuries. Who knows? But just thank you so much.
Such a pleasure being here, Michael.
It's great to be with you, too, my friend.
And Marielle.
Thank you.
And Marielle, I think I'm ready to retire and turn it over to you. I think it's time for that.
She's a lot prettier than you are.
Yeah, she is a lot prettier. I have a face made for radio, right? We could get her on TV, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, thank you both so much. It's really great.
And thank you, Michael, for inspiring such wonderful conversations.
Oh, yes. Over the years, you've brought so many great people to radio.
It's so much fun. Yes. I have the best job in the world. People give me their books, and then I get to talk to them about it. How cool is that?
How great is that?
Thank you, Nevada City. It's good to be back. I'll be here for a couple weeks, so I'm not sure who I'll have on next week, but it'll be fun. It'll be good to be with you. For now, this is KVMR Conversations. Michael Stone saying, remember, it's you that makes the difference. Many blessings, my friends. The earth is
You're listening to KVMR FM, Nevada City, KCPC, Camino Placerville, and got a big show in today, and hopefully we'll be able to fit it all in. Good to hear Michael Stone back, and let's see, we got a Matt Schofield appeared at the Center for the Arts about 10 days ago. Felton Pruitt recorded the show and produced it for rebroadcast, so that's what we're going to be doing, and it's...